just Marina Avshlita. I'm not sure how many people are going to visit a zoo today. Maybe I should have repeated an earlier show we once did about snow. All right, we'll just plod ahead and see how we go. The first question which I'll ask is, can you actually visit a zoo halakhically? Are you allowed to visit a zoo? If you're going to put animals in cages and make them suffer in terms of some sort of cruelty, I mean, I wouldn't like to be locked behind bars. Then if you're going to the zoo and you are paying for the running of that zoo, you are supporting the fact that these animals are shut away in cages. This question is in fact addressed by a couple of Shalos HaTshuvos. The Horus Noson Rav Gestetner in Chelek Dalet Siman Samen Ches, who says it's all right to go to a zoo, even it's all right to go to a horse race, but he doesn't allow sports with animals such as bullfights. Rav Avadi Yosef writes in Yalkut Yosef in Siman Reish Chaf A Kaf Aleph, and he also talks about in Yabia Omer Chelek Dalet Chaf. He says, if there is a Tzar Balei Chaim, and it's not clearly established that there is, but if there is a suffering caused to animals, there are instances we find in Halacha where we are more lenient with Tzar Balei Chaim when there is some sort of benefit to people. He says that you are preserving species by having zoos. There is an educational element and a human benefit. You're learning about Hashem's creations. And the Ramon Eben Oezes, in the end of Simon Hay, talks about the general principle of Tzar Balei Chaim when it does apply, when it doesn't apply. We once discussed this subject. And clearly, when it comes to zoos, we do not infringe the rules relating to it. Indeed, there are a couple of instances recorded of very great Rabbonim who visited a zoo. The Sefer Leket Yoshen, Orach Chaim Samach Vov, talks about his Rav, who was the Trumas HaDeshen, Rav Isselin, who in his town found out that there would be a lion passing through, well, an accompanied lion in a cage, and so he specially walked on Shabbos to go and see this lion. In Europe, in those countries in the 17th, 18th centuries, they knew about the names of animals, but they didn't see much of them. And the Chidor, who travelled very widely, Rav Azulay, he wrote the Shema Gedolim about all his travels, and he writes in Sefer Midbar Kadmos in Beis Kaf Beis that he visited the London Zoo. Apparently he also visited the Tower of London. And he writes about an amazing eagle he saw at the London Zoo, which was over 100 years old, and about other animals. And he writes, Pele la Pele, he says, this is just amazing how Hashem made all these variety of creatures. There is a big frowning in Halacha about circuses because of the sports and the way that animals might be trained, and then it might be Moshav Leitzim just for lazy people. And the Sefer Minhag Yisrael Torah Chelek Aleph, page 351, says even if it's to go for some spiritual purpose, like saying a bracha, which we're going to talk about in a minute, then one should not go to where they're performing. Whether that applies to watching sea lions in a theme park and so on, I haven't found any source for that, but I don't think there's any cruelty involved in those things. There is a minority view, a very minority view, which says that you mustn't gaze at any non-kosher animal. But this is not a halacha. It is brought down in the Sefer Shuas Chochmah to actually stare at non-kosher animals, that there's a segula shloli stakel behemos tomeos, because it creates a ruach tumah, some impurity which surrounds you. And the Sefer Kav Yosha writes, it's all right to look at these animals, but maybe you shouldn't stare at them for long periods. But none of this is halacha lemaisa. It's certainly allowed to watch these animals, and particularly there is a bracha in the Gemara which talks about, we're going to now discuss, and that is a bracha meshaneh habrios. If one sees, says the Gemara in Brachas Nun Ches on a base, if you see an elephant or a monkey. And it also talks about an animal called a kipoth, which it's not clear what the translation is. Some say it's some kind of owl, some say it's some kind of weasel. But when you see these animals, you say, Baruch Atah Hashem, with a shame, Elokeinu Melech Ha'olam, Meshane Habrios. Now this is a strange bracha, Meshane Habrios, who makes creatures differently, or in a different form, or in a variety of ways. And the Gemara also says that you make this bracha when you see a human being who is a giant or a midget. But it's something unusual. The Rambam in Hilchos Brachos Perek Yud Halacha Beis brings this down to Halacha, but just like he and the Shulchan Aruch in Reish Kafei Ches do not mention this animal, the Kipof. They just mention the elephants and the monkeys. The Chaya Odom does as well in Samach Gimel Yud Dalet and Yeruch HaShulchan in Reish Kafei Yud Gimel. Well, we'll come to that. It's a very perplexing question. The Ramah writes that you say this bracha once in 30 days, just like when you visit the sea. If you haven't seen it for 30 days, you make the bracha. So if you haven't seen an elephant or a monkey for the last 30 days, you make this bracha. So why elephants or monkeys? Thank you for the question, which was just to proceed with what I was about to say. You know, there are lots of interesting and varied animals in the zoo, some of them very strange indeed. It's true to suggest that when children are watching unusual animals, they do spend a long time in the zoos watching monkeys and elephants, but it could be, for that matter, any animal. Meiri writes on this Gemara that these animals resemble in some way human beings. Now that is very difficult to understand. Alright, the monkey, the chimpanzee might look very similar to humans in a number of ways, but an elephant, how does an elephant resemble a human being? It's true that the elephant has an enormous intelligence. The elephant has a huge brain, and elephants never forget, and you get these stories about 25 years passing and the elephant remembers some fellow was cruel to him and he gave him a whacking many, many years later. So it may be that there's something about the elephant's brain which is similar to the human brain. I don't know. But the Meiri is very perplexing. But to say that the monkeys and elephants resemble human beings, Sir Rabbi Tal of Stern comes to the rescue in his Sefer Alecho Bamitecho. He talks a lot about travels and he talks about visiting zoos. And he says, when you look back during the flood, Noah's flood, Hashem punished certain people by turning them into elephants and monkeys. So this is getting a bit mystical. And in fact it's brought down that interpreting dreams, generally speaking, any animal you dream about is supposed to be a good dream. But it doesn't apply to elephants and monkeys. Because many elephants and monkeys, it's written, are a Gilgul. They're like a reincarnation of human beings who are being punished. So when you're saying the bracha Mashane Abrios, just like you're saying it over human beings who are...
Say you're saying it over what might be assumed to be some sort of transformed human being in the form of elephants and monkeys. But this is certainly very... Rav Batel Stern, who was the brother of David Shina Rav, he was a Rav in Australia for many years. He wrote the Shailas of Shulas Batel HaChochma. He specialized on various Shailas relating to traveling on date lines and things like that, because he was in Australia. And he brings this down. The Tosefta Kipshuta in Zeroim, Chelek Aleph in Kut Zayin, says something similar, that he says it doesn't mean elephants and monkeys Kipshuta. He says that when you say Mashane Abrios, it's on various kinds of human beings. He says it's not on animals at all. He says it's on giants, and he says an elephant, he says, is a euphemism for giants.
Elephant man.
The elephant is what? It's the largest creature on earth, isn't it? So he says it's a euphemism for giants. And he says that the monkey is a euphemism for a human being who is very, very ugly. Well, that's what he says. Anyway, it's brought down in Halacha then. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discusses the question in his Sefer Halichas Shloma about when you go to the zoo, and he says not just elephants or monkeys, but any unusual creature which you find amazing. So he says the bracha Mashane Abrios al kol chayos mashunos, on all kinds of varied animals which might be unusual, mavarich birchas Mashane Abrios.
On each one?
Well, we'll come to that. The pil, the kuf, and the elephant and the monkey, Shemizkru, the Gemara, they are the ones mentioned in the Gemara, lav dafka. Not necessarily just those. Then he says they are given as examples. But al dogi mashini ein mavarech, but on unusual fish you don't. Because he's talking about animals, and fish we don't include as animals. He don't want to see the Gemara el al chayos bovat. And he writes in the footnote, Vahara Rabbeinu, or the Talmudim write, that when one goes into the zoo, Yivarech Bereiyas HaChaya HaMashuna HaRishona, the first unusual animal that you see, you make this bracha Mashana Brios, and the Yichavin, and you have in mind, Lifto Bekach Kol HaRios Shalachakach, to include all the animals which you're going to see after it. So you make this bracha only once. You can make it over any animal which you find amazing and unusual, not just elephants and monkeys, but when you make the bracha, you have in mind that any unusual animal that you see in the zoo, you make this bracha. So that's Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He was the Rav of our Rav of this shul. So, you know, this is halacha lemaisa. Rav Avadi Yosef, he is of an opinion that the bracha only applies to elephants and monkeys, because we take the Gemara at literal face value, and in Yosef Reish Kafei Kafalov, he deals with also allowing zoo visits, which is permissible, and he says you make this bracha when you see elephants and monkeys, and he says that if you see an unusual parrot, and you are greatly amazed by seeing this parrot, you won't make the bracha Mashani Abrios, you make the bracha Shekocha Lo Ba'olomo. As a one-off, he says, in a once-in-a-lifetime bracha. But the bracha Mashana Abrios, he says, on elephants and monkeys, you make once in 30 days. So if you haven't seen the elephant or monkey for 30 days, then you will make that bracha again after the 30 days. Anyway, the Sefer River Mos Ephraim says he finds it rather odd that we single out these animals, monkeys and elephants. But he says, he suggests that these animals are watched much more than other animals when people come to see them because of their antics or their unusual behavior. The way the elephant frees himself with the trunk, the way monkeys behave and jumping around. Then the question is raised, does one have an obligation to go to the zoo? Just like there might be an obligation, we're going to discuss in a couple of months' time, there is an obligation to go and see a king, even a non-Jewish king, or to go and see royalty, one makes a certain bracha. But in the case of animals, you have an obligation. And so the answer to that is no. You don't have to. You don't close your Gemara in order to go to the zoo. It's like a mitzvah kiyumis. If you happen to build a building with a flat roof, then you have to put a fence around it. So that's called a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyumis. Somebody who sees beautiful creatures, bein odom, bein behema v'chaya, any human or animal, or ilonos tovim, or beautiful trees, one makes the bracha on that only once, v'alacheres m'osa zub m'vayet achalam adyom. The Stout Ragon of Yaakov Yisrael Kanievsky made the point of taking his children to a zoo in Ramat Gan to see monkeys and to make the bracha. It's also brought down that the Munkat Sharov, the Minchas Elozer, Rav Chaim Elozer Shapiro, describes visiting a zoo in Berlin, and he made the bracha over the monkeys, and in doing so he had in mind the bracha over the elephants as well. It's clear that he intended specifically those two species and to exclude other species. A more recent Rav Yuval Shlomo, Rosh Yeshiva Petach Tikva, he writes that we don't bother with these brachas. His opinion is that monkeys and elephants were strange to Chazal in former times, but today they're not so unusual to us because we have it easier to access them and see them. So he feels that one does not make such a bracha, and only on rare animals would one make such a bracha. But his view is a very minority view. Others don't agree with him. So it seems quite clear that one does make this bracha Mashane Habrios. Rav Simcha Rabinowitz in the Piskei Teshuvos in Chelek Beis, page 919, he disagrees with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about making just one bracha on the first unusual animal that you see. He writes that for each animal you see, you make a separate bracha, because it's a brichas re'iyah, it's a bracha on seeing, and you can't have in mind a subsequent animal when you're doing a bracha on seeing something, because when you're doing a bracha on seeing something, it is when you see it, unlike when you eat some food and you have in mind when you eat your banana, you say, Berpi Adam, I'm absolutely going to eat a carrot. But it's not the same with brichas re'iyah. It's got to go according to what you see at that moment. So he says you make a bracha on every single one of those which you see, and Rabbi Tzalel Stern agrees with that. He says you make a new bracha for each animal. all right, whatever's halacha ma'is, you go according to what your Rav says, but the view then of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is you make the bracha once when you visit the zoo, and have in mind all unusual animals. And Rav Simcha Rabinovitz and Rabbi Tzalel Stern agrees with this Rabbi Eliezer Melamed in the Panini Halacha, you make a bracha for each one. If, however, you are in an unclean environment, like there is excrement from the animal present, then you don't make a bracha, because you can't make a bracha in such an environment. Well, if you see a group of elephants or a group of monkeys, you only make one bracha. But certainly, according to these last three opinions, when you go to the monkeys, you say one bracha, and then when you go to the elephants, you say the bracha again.
You can't see the excrement, isn't it? Obviously, it's going to be excrement. You can't see it.
Well, if the smell puts you off, then you won't. But if you can't see it, you can't smell it, then you make a bracha. So you're going to the zoo, you're seeing Hashem's creations, and it's flabbergasting. And we see so much of the Bria, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah Lamed Aleph talks about Thursday being a special day when birds and fish were created, and these are creatures which sing praise to Hashem. This is an Ovis to Rabbi Nosson, Perik Aleph Ches. And the Rambam writes in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, we once discussed it, that when you study Hashem's creatures and Hashem's nature, it brings you to Avas Hashem. It brings you to the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you see all these amazing things which go on. And from time to time you see things that scientists have discovered, some amazing thing about animals, and you realize that there's something going on amongst the animal kingdom which we just have no idea about. I read recently about some experiment they made about migrating birds. So birds, they leave this country when the weather gets cold, and they go all the way to places like South Africa. And what happens is that the male bird of the family goes ahead, because he gets the nest ready and prepares things, and then the mother bird with the kids come later. And what they did was they put a little ring around the feet of the birds to trace how they are moving, and they discovered that the mother bird and with the kids, when they fly out later to meet the father bird, they swoop down at exactly the same place where the father bird is. They don't have sat nav, they don't have maps, they don't have to ask directions for people which way did this bird go. They somehow find each other thousands of miles away. In the tsunami disaster which happened about 4 years ago in the Far East, Thailand, Sri Lanka, before the tsunami happened, the animals which were grazing near to the seaside all walked up the hill, away from the beach, far out of reach of the water coming in. How did they know? They have some extrasensory power. We've spoken already about the intelligence of elephants. There are these experiments scientists have done where birds see some food in, say, a bottle, and they can't reach it with their beaks, and they go and fetch water to make the food rise in order to get to the top, in order that they can get it. These creatures are very intelligent creatures. And you might begin to ask, well, what's the difference between animals and human beings? Well, we have the power of speech. We can do Talmud Torah, which they can't with speech. We can do Averis as well with our speech. But the real difference between us and them is Bechira. We have free will. Animals have intelligence. They can do lots of things. Well, you might say they can't. They can't reason. They might do many things out of instinct. But a dog looks before he crosses the road. The fact of the matter is that animals are very close in their mentality to humans, except that they don't have a choice between good and bad when it comes to doing mitzvahs. The Gemara in Erevin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis, says that if the Torah would never have been given, we could learn how to behave just by watching animals. We could learn modesty from the cat. The cat eliminates its waste privately and buries it. We would learn from the ant how to be hardworking and how not to steal from others. The ant lives close to other ants but never steals from other ants. We would learn about the fidelity of the dove, which is faithful to its mate and never flirts around. And we would learn from the rooster, who has good manners in marital relations in the way it treats its partner. All these, lists the various animals, how we can learn from the various middos. And there's a posuk in Eov, in Lamed Hay, posuk Yud Aleph, which says, Hashem teaches us from animals of land and from birds of the heavens how we should become wise. We all know the Mishnah in Perkei Avos and Perek Dalet, Mishnah Chaf Gimel, how we should behave, how they as kenemer, we should be bold like a leopard, kal kanesher, light as an eagle, rots katzvi, we should run like a deer, gibo ka'ari, mighty like the lion, la'asos v'sayon avicha shabashavayim, in order to fulfill the wish of our Father in Heaven. So how does this tally up? How can you be bold if you also got to be modest? There are various perushim on this. The Meiri talks about that you do have to be bold sometimes to do mitzvahs. In order to get the ge'ula, we're going to have to be bold. But you have to temper the situation of what you're in. What does it mean, light like an eagle? The eagle, unlike other birds, which carries the young underneath the body, the eagle carries its young on top of the body, because the eagle's worried about arrows. Although it's flying the highest amongst all other birds, the eagle is worried about arrows being fired at it, so it carries its young on the top. But the eagle makes a lot of noise when it swooshes and flies places, but when it lands near to its babies, it lands very quietly in order not to wake them up. So we learn from animals. There's also another Mishnah in Perkei Avos, in Perek Dalet, in Mishnah Chaf, Halezonov la'arroyos v'alti rosh l'shu'olim. You should rather be like a tail of lions than a head of foxes. Better be a fellow of the righteous, the commentaries say, rather than the head of a gang. We know from the Parsha of Shemini which animals we are allowed to eat and which animals we are not allowed to eat. And the Parsha in Shemini talks about lahavdil bein hatomei uvein hatohar. You have to distinguish between those animals which are not kosher and those animals which are kosher. And Rashi there says, lo bubat hashonet, not just to learn about these animals, elashotei yodea umakir uboki bohen. You have to recognize them and know about them and become an expert about them. And how are you going to do that? You're going to go out and see such animals, and you're going to say, this animal is kosher, that animal is not kosher. And then the Tziv writes in his Perish on Shemini, in Perik Yudal of Posuk Memzayim, he says, mitzvahs asay. It is a mitzvahs asay, a positive command, to actually go out of your way to look at animals. So we were asking before about whether it's a mitzvah to go to the zoo. Says in the Tziv, it's a mitzvah to go to visit such animals and look at them and say, this one chews the cud, this one parts the hoof, or whatever, and to know which one is kosher and which is not kosher. And this is brought down from the Taras Kahanim, who brings Perishra, Ein demazir rachmona b'chumon lahavdol bein tomei l'tar. The Torah is warning that you have to go out of your way to distinguish between kosher and non-kosher animals, not just to learn about them, but to actually go and see them, sheyitrach lakiron, that you go to the bother of recognizing them to know which is tomei and which is tahor. And so it's also mashma from the Rambam in the very beginning of Hilchos Macholos Asuros. The Radvaz and the Kesef Mishnah say on this Rambam, look, if you want to eat such animals, then you have to know about them. If you don't want to eat them, you don't have to go out of your way to look at them. But the view of the Nativ and the Taras Kahanim is, and also Rashi, is that you have to go out of your way to see such animals. The Pasuk in Shemini talks about Kol mafreses pavsa v'shosas shesa proses malas geira b'abehemo osato chelu. An animal, in order to be kosher, has to part the hoof completely and also must chew the cud. And then the Chumash carries on and says those animals which have only one and not the other. So it says, Achizel lo sochlu mimalei hagerom mimafrisei haparso es hagamol, the camel, ki malei geirohu, it chews the cud, ufarsoi menu mafris, but it doesn't split the hoof. Mafris hu, tomehu lochem, ves hashofon, ki malei geirohu, ufarsoi lo yafris, and similarly, like the camel, there is the shofon, which chews the cud, and does not part the hoof, but it says it in the future tense. Ufarso lo yafris. And then it says, Veshar neves. Ki malas geiro hi. Ufarso lo hifriso. So that's in present tense. It does not part the hoof. And then you've got the chazir, which is the only animal, ki mafris parasohu, which parts the hoof. Shosashesa parasohu geiro lo yigo, but does not chew the cud. there's this Yiddish expression, chazafisel. The pig likes to show its feet off, saying, see, look, I'm kosher. But really, it's not. So the Torah goes out of its way to list all the animals which have one category and not the other category. And the question is, what is the gomel and what is the shofan and what is the arnevis? We know that a gomel is a camel, but what is a shofan and arnevis? I think we discussed once an article about it. And various commentaries grapple with this. The Shalos HaTshuvos of Rabbi Chiel Yaakov Weinberg in the Sridei Eish, in Chelek Beis Perek Samach Dalet, discusses the various opinions which are brought down about what is the shofan and what is the arnevis. Because many people translate the shofan as a rock badger or coney, and the arnevis as some sort of rabbit or a hare. And Sridei Eish brings those opinions down and the doubt that people cause about them. And he does say that according to our Rav Dr. Yosef Zeliger, he says, arnevis v'ashofan he mine gemalim, they are kinds of camels. And he brings this from another sefer called Barzilai, that they are kinds of camels. And so a certain rabbi called Rav Meir Lubin decided to do research on this subject and found great difficulty. He looked at the various translations. He refers to Dr. Hertz, who talks about rock badger or coney, and he brings the Sonsino, who says rock badger or hare. Isaac Levy, quoting Rabbi Hirsch, writes shofan as the rabbit and arnevis as the hare. However, despite all this, he quotes Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in his commentary, who says, these animals are not hoofed animals at all. One usually takes shofan to be the rabbit and the arnevis to be the hare. He says, but this translation can only be right if we were sure that both these animals chew the cud, which hardly seems to be the case. The additional problem is that hares and rabbits don't have hooves. They have paws, which is not the same thing. Then there is the possibility, is asked, well, maybe it's that the hare looks like it's chewing the cud. Dr. Hertz writes, this animal, like the hare, has the habit of working the jaws as though they were masticating food. But that's not the case that they are. And he finds it difficult to say that just because an animal looks like it's chewing the cud, even though it's not chewing the cud, would that truly be something which would come into this category? It's not enough to say an animal which appears to do so. And therefore he sets out to do various kinds of research. He discovers that Rav Hirsch is not the first commentary who questions this translation about hares and rabbits. He quotes the Das Akeni Mibale HaTosfos, who wrote in the 12th century, that's 800 years ago, who asks, why is the shofan arnevis brought in this category? It says they walk on their paws like a bear or a dog or a cat, and not because they have hooves. So there the question is put already then as to what the translation is. Dr. Hertz does write that at the bottom of the camel's hoof there is a kind of elastic pad or cushion, and the camel gets its foothold on that in the sand, and this pad prevents the hoof from being wholly divided. So though when you look at the camel's feet you see a division, that division does not run all the way through because there's this kind of pad or cushion underneath. So what this Rabbi Lubin did was try to see what other animals there are which fit this category, which have this kind of pad or cushion. He goes into various technical questions and then also asks the question, why is it that in the Chumash you've got different tenses with the past and the present and the future with a gomel, shofan and arnevis? Anyway, to cut a long story short, he finds from inquiries that he made from the assistant curator of Bronx Zoo of Mammals and Birds, she sent him some photocopies and she even crossed out the bit which turned out to be the most interesting part. And it said that the other animals in the camel family are, well, there's the humped camel, there's a two-humped camel, and there is the llama. The llama which runs around the South American Andes Mountains. And it's the fact that those are the only animals which part the hoof at the top but not at the bottom. Rashi, by the way, in Shemini, talks about animals which part the hoof all the way through from top to bottom. and he found that it's the llama animals and the other camels which fit this category, and they walk not really on their hooves, but on this elastic kind of pad which was at the bottom. And then he realizes that these three animals are all the members of the camel family, including the llama. And he explains how he understands that the one-humped camel is the gomel. He says the shofon is the llama and the arneves is the two-humped camel. And he fits this in with the tenses, with the past, the present, the future, that the animal which they're used to, the two-humped camel, which they had seen already, but was not with them, but it was common in the tribe already in those days to have both the one-humped camel and two-humped camel. And the one in the future tense, he says, is the llama. Because the llama wasn't yet discovered. It was only in South America. Which all gives enormous strength to the idea of the Torah listing only those animals in these categories. If the Torah were chas v'shalom be fabricated and man-made, nobody would dare write names of animals amongst those categories. To actually write the names of animals of three animals in one category and one animal, the chazir, in the other category, is something which can only take place min hashamayim. Because any imposter wouldn't dare write such names of animals, because future animals might otherwise be discovered which also fit those categories. You might find, like the chazir, that the Torah singles out the chazir as being the only animal in the world of this category. This is a raya of Torah being min hashamayim. And Rav Cooper once told us a story about a fellow comes to the Rav. And later on this fellow asked the Rav about the kashrus of a certain item of meat, and the Rav said, oh, that's such an easy question, give it to your dog, he'll decide. And afterwards the Rav meets this man and says, Nu, how did you get on? He says, oi Rebbe, mein Hund is a groyser machme. There's an interesting question which comes up about giraffes, something which everyone likes seeing in the zoo, and I've just been told by Henry that he sees giraffes every day driving to work because they're peeping over the fence. It is completely wrong of people to say that we don't shech the giraffe because we don't know where to. People think that because we don't know allegedly where to shech it on its long neck, we can't eat it. That's not the reason. Children say this, grown-ups say this, it's totally untrue. The giraffe is a kosher animal. In fact, there's a worry with many kinds of meat. Do we have a masorah? Even turkeys. I know one fellow who's machmir not to eat turkeys because he says there's no real masorah to eat turkeys. But the giraffe, there is a masorah for it. Rav Sadia Gaon wrote 1,000 years ago that the giraffe is a kosher animal. Rabbeinu Yonah writes it's a kosher animal. The Radak writes it's a kosher animal. And when the 70 rabbis were translating the Torah into Greek, the Septuagint, they used a word to say that it was kosher, and it's described in the Torah as zemer, ma'ikro yudalav and zeroim yudalad. So what is it about the giraffe that we don't eat it? Anyway, there's an article about it in Tachumin. It's just impractical and it's expensive.
Yes.
Giraffe meat costs $10,000 a kilo.
It's very tough.
It's a very tough meat.
It has a bad taste.
Yeah, and it's very hard to control a giraffe. A kick of a giraffe can kill a lion. So I don't suggest you try a shechting one. I mean, and the question of the length of the neck is totally irrelevant. A pigeon has only an inch or two for shechita. A cow has a longer neck, maybe 12 inches. And a giraffe got 6 or 8, 9 feet. But you can shech the giraffe. It's just that it's not practical to do so. Yes. Yes. But I don't recommend you try.
Yeah, they have a series where they have some sort of banquet.
Yeah, that's right.
Didn't they? All the animals, including a giraffe, which are kosher there. Yeah, yeah,
they had some, didn't they? I know that there was some proclamation by the Rabbi Nut in Israel to confirm that the giraffe is kosher and maybe eat them. Well, the problem with locusts is there are different kinds and we don't have a masorah.
We don't have a masorah.
Yes, I think the Taimani Jews have some masorah. Yes. it's a fascinating subject. So even if you're a vegetarian, you have a duty to go, according to the tzid, you've got a mitzvah saseh, to go to the zoo and to identify that animal is kosher, that animal is not kosher. The Meiri in his Perush on that Mishnah of being as kenemer, where you should be bold like a leopard and you should run like the deer and strong like the lion, he says there is another girsa which is brought in some Sephardi Mishnayos on be as ponim. It says Yirotzon Shetivne Iricha, please Hashem may your city Jerusalem be built b'mheira b'yomeinu, speedily in our days. Kolom asher azus haponim to the eil l'sinas hamelchichim, that our boldness will give rise to a strength in the way we face up to our enemies. U'mius b'derech hatov b'boshes haponim, and that we should also have an ashamedness not to do averus, and that will bring us about to the time of the Mashiach. And it's interesting because yesterday we read the story of B'shalach and the Kriyas Yamsuf, and we have, there's an interesting parish of the Ibn Ezra, and the Ibn Ezra says that Hashem gave us an inner strength, a kind of azus. He says, a chizuk levavachem. You've got chizuk halev, which is a phrase referring to Paro and his army, where Hashem hardened their hearts, took away bechira as a punishment in the way they behaved towards us. But Ibn Ezra says that Hashem also gave hardening to our hearts, a chizuk halev and a boldness to be able to withstand the Egyptians in the way they might behave towards us. I mean, can you imagine if all the firstborn were being killed? The Jewish people must be very frightened afterwards, because they'll come and lynch us. We'll get beaten up. Road rage is bad enough, but if you get all their firstborn killed, we would be really frightened. And if we smear blood on the doorposts and Hashem jumps over it and so on, we're smearing the blood of their Avodah Zorah, that they might come and harm us as a result. So Hashem gave us this inner strength, this azus ponim. And says the Meiri, that azus ponim which we learned from the leopard is the same azus ponim which we're going to have, which will bring Mashiach to Canaan, which should happen b'mehar b'yomeinu speedily in our days. Well, enjoy your visit to the zoo. Thank you. Yeah.